Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When word came out that Barack Obama's mother-in-law would be moving into the White House, comedians pounced. Marian Robinson, 71, moving into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with the new president's family, was a situation made for late-night joke writers. But the fact is, a lot of American families are doing or thinking about doing the same thing. Work pressure and economic pressure are making more in-laws, grandparents, welcome to help take care of the kids. This hour On Point, One Roof, Many Generations, makes a comeback. You can join the conversation. Do your in-laws or your parents live with you? Do you envy the Obamas for having grandma in the house to help out? Or not. Joining us from Olympia, Washington is Stephanie Kuntz. She's professor of history and family studies at Evergreen State College, also director of research and public education for the Council on Contemporary Families. Her most recent book is Marriage, A History. Stephanie Kuntz, welcome back to On Point. It's nice to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Also with us from Berkeley, California is Joshua Coleman. He's a clinical psychologist and an expert on families, parenting, and relationships. His most recent book is When Parents Hurt. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Joshua Coleman, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So here we are. We've got an example of something that is by no means without precedent. Many families have done and are doing it, but we've got it right there in the first family in the White House. Listen to a couple of clips with me, if you would. First, here's President-elect Barack Obama with high praise for his mother-in-law, Marian Robinson, in a 60 Minutes interview shortly after his election.
I think it's fair to say that Marian Robinson is one of the unsung heroes of this campaign. We couldn't have done it without her, because she retired, looked after the girls, gave Michelle confidence that somebody was going to be there when Michelle was on the road. Yeah, she's just been an unbelievable support for all of us during this process.
An unbelievable support, and what household with two parents working couldn't imagine that? 60 Minutes reporter Steve Croft went on to ask another question about the mother-in-law, Marian Robinson.
There's been a lot of talk about you. You talked about your mother-in-law. Is she moving in with you?
Well, I don't tell my mother-in-law what to do. But you know, I'm not stupid. That's why I got elected president, man.
A little laughter there from Michelle Obama at Barack Obama's side, but the answer, it turned out, was yes. Yes, the Chicago Tribune calls her first granny, and she's moving in with the Obamas. There is not much of Marian Robinson on tape, but she did give an interview to the Boston Globe in March of last year. She was already very involved with the family and said there, the tape's a little rougher, but said she enjoyed taking care of her grandkids, Malia and Sasha, while Barack and Michelle were on the campaign trail.
I'm doing it, but I really want to do it. It's not even a job. It's like somebody's going to be with these kids up in there. It better be me.
Somebody's going to be with these kids, and if it isn't their parents, it had better be me. Stephanie Kuntz, what about grandparents helping take care of kids? Where do we stand in the arc of that in America's long history of different dynamics of family and care and parents and grandparents?
Well, when you look at most of the past, grandmothers weren't alive long enough or healthy long enough to spend a lot of time raising their grandchildren. But when you look at the 19th century households in America, for example, and there were far fewer households today that were capable of being extended families because of the higher mortality rates, but a higher, much higher proportion of those who could have extended families did so. Although, of course, the relationships between parents and adult children and grandchildren were different. I think we're seeing something quite new. In one sense, it's a rediscovery of extended family ties, which we moved away from the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But in another sense, it's a new way of doing those family ties.
Joshua Coleman, what do you make of Marian Robinson? She's 71. And very sprightly, I must say, back in Illinois, she participated in the Senior Olympics, running the 50 and 100-yard dash we read well into her 60s. She seems completely clued in. We saw on election night her sitting with Barack Obama, watching results come in, holding the hand of her son-in-law as his victory unfolded there. How's it look to you, Josh Coleman, the idea, the fact of her being there with Michelle and Barack and the first family in the White House?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's very moving to see it. I think she's a role model to us all. I think that the notion of grandparents being much more closely involved with their grandchildren is really a win-win. It's a win for the grandchildren, and it's also an enormous win for the grandparents to have that kind of involvement with their grandchildren.
She said in the Globe interview that she did, she said, bedtime at 8:30, that's ridiculous. She said, television only an hour a day. These are Michelle Obama's tougher rules. The grandmother, the mother-in-law, said, that's just not enough time, 1 hour of television. And food, the healthy organic foods, the Obama's favor. She said, that's not my thing. If you're going to have fried chicken, have fried chicken. Okay, Stephanie Kuntz, is this the outline of a clash to come, or is this just generations speaking to one another?
Well, I think that it is generations speaking with each other and feeling free to speak with each other. Back in the 1940s and 50s, family experts, people like Joshua Coleman, were telling people, not him, of course, but they were telling people that it was really bad to have any kind of in-laws living with you or parents living with you because you would have different views about child rearing. And the assumption was that you wouldn't be able to negotiate them, that parent and adult children relationships were so strict and rigid that they wouldn't be able to negotiate. So what I hear is people saying, there's more than one way to raise a kid. And that's a good thing for American parents to know, by the way, right now. And a grandmother and a mother and a son-in-law who feel free enough to say, well, we'll each do it our own way, and basically we can still work it out.
Do you know anything about the numbers, Stephanie? It's everything I read says that the number of households where grandparents, in-laws, at least one, are living with a family that, where there are adult parents and children is growing. Do you know, or you, Josh Coleman, where that stands at this point?
I know where it stands, although we have two separate surveys that may not be exactly comparable.
Okay.
But according to the census data in December, there are about 3.5 million parents who are sharing a home with their adult children in the U.S., and that's up from 2.1 million in 2000.
Wow.
So it's a very significant rise. The AARP shows that multi-generational households are up from, in general, from 5 million in 2000 to more than 6 million. And there are also more brothers, sisters, and other relatives living together. So it's very interesting. The other thing that's very interesting in the statistics is it's not just elderly parents moving in to be cared for. The number of parents under 65 increased even more than the number of parents 65 and older living with their kids.
Joshua Coleman, do you expect that the economic crunch that we're suddenly in may accelerate this? Daycare is expensive. Lots of things are expensive. Might we see even more of this unfolding as we move forward, Josh?
Yes, I think that the economic trends makes it look like it's going to continue. And I also think the social trends. I think today's boomer parents are maybe one of the first generations to really have a much less authoritarian relationship with their children. And what that's meant is that it's a much more intimate relationship that you're seeing these days between parents and their adult children. And it opens up the climate for a long-term friendship to develop. So I think for both economic and social reasons, I think we're more likely to see this trend continue.
You mean if you go back a generation, what, the parents – By then, the grandparents would have been stricter with their adult children and maybe have a less sort of we-can-be-friends relationship, Josh?
I would say so. If you look at parenting surveys in the 1920s, what parents really emphasized in their child rearing was much more conformity, obedience. They're in some ways more interested in their children's respect than really getting their children's love. And if you look at parenting surveys today, what you see is that what parents really want is for their children to love them. They only want their children's autonomy, their individuality. And that radically changes the kind of climate that exists between parents and children. So you see a lot more of adult children having much more intimate relationships with their parents.
Of course, it wasn't always like that. There were endless jokes about it. They made it into every nook and cranny of popular culture, especially when it came to the mother-in-law. Just for fun, let's hear it. Here's a little bit from the Flintstones, no less. Fred Flintstone struggling to keep it together when Wilma's mother visits.
Fred, I want to thank you for being so nice to Mother.
I'm trying, Wilma. I'm trying hard.
I know, dear. And I think you're winning her over.
I sure hope so.
Why don't you look where you're going, clumsy?
I'm sorry, mother-in-law, dear. I didn't expect you to stick your foot out. I love my mother-in-law. I love my
Stephanie Kuntz, okay, it's over the top. But, I mean, I remember a time when that was almost a uniform view of the mother-in-law, of the idea of the mother-in-law in the house, certainly living there, Stephanie. That was just it.
Well, yes, it was for about 100 years. It's really, really interesting because when you go back in history, you know, we have put so many emotional eggs into the basket of marriage. But from medieval days, colonial days, until the mid-19th century, diaries and letters, you know, more often use the word love to refer to extended family than to spouses. When honeymoons first started in the 19th century, couples often took along their relatives or friends for companies. And if you read Victorian novels, they're just as passionate about having the mother or the father or the brother and sister with them. But then in the early 20th century, as marriage became much more sexualized, much more intense, and there was this good step forward of thinking that men and women should get more satisfactions from each other, emotional, sexual, and intellectual, but there was this huge reaction that told people to break with their parents. It was called the silver cord that attached you to your parents.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about grandparents helping parents raise kids. Barack Obama's mother-in-law is in the house, and a lot of other in-laws, grandparents, increasingly are too. We're asking, how does it work? Joshua Coleman is with us from Berkeley, California, author of When Parents Hurt. He's a clinical psychologist, expert on families, parenting, and relationships. Stephanie Kuntz is here from Olympia, Washington, professor at Evergreen State College, director of research and public education at the Council on Contemporary Families, and author of Marriage, a History. And we might as well get it out of the way. Of course, the late night guys were all over it. Here's Jay Leno.
You know, Barack Obama's mother-in-law is going to be moving into the White House with them.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
I think this qualifies as change he does not believe in.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. But, of course, that's been the joke. Here's Raymond's wife, Deborah, from Everybody Loves Raymond, struggling with her mother-in-law's attitude toward housework.
Your mother is so condescending. She actually said to me, "The brown part is what you don't want." I've never peeled a potato before. I know the brown part is what I don't want. I'm not an idiot.
You know, you do just pretend the potatoes are my mother's head.
I'm way ahead of you.
Okay, there's the TV laugh line version. But here's Michelle Obama in her speech in the floodlights at the Democratic National Convention. And one of the first things she mentioned was her gratitude to her mother and her mother's support.
My mother's love has always been a sustaining force for our family. And one of my greatest joys is seeing her integrity, her compassion, her intelligence reflected in my daughters.
Michelle Obama talking about her mother, Marianne Robinson, 71, who's moving into the White House. Stephanie Kuntz, I had to interrupt when we took the break, but you were talking about the things, first of all, in expectations of the married relationship that sort of drove grandparents out of the house. But there was also the whole idea of Freud analysis, the Oedipal complex and all that sort of got into popular culture as well and pushed.
Yes, and it came together with what Josh was talking about, the very authoritarian child-rearing, so that even if the mother got along with her own daughter okay, she was going to, she might not agree with her husband. So these in-law jokes, one way of thinking about them is they're so 20th century, and they hit their absolute height in the 40s and 50s. As Freudian psychiatrists said, oh my goodness, the worst thing you can do is have your parents come into the house. You have to break completely with your parents. And I suppose there was an element of truth in this. With kids marrying in 1960, the average woman married before she got out of her teens. She went straight from a relationship where her parents had been in charge of her into marriage. And so psychiatrists were saying, well, you've got to break. You know, you can't really bond with your husband if you continue to bond with these authoritarian parents. But as the age of marriage has risen, as child rearing has become more individualized, more democratic, we're finding real friendships, not just between adult kids and their parents, but also between the partners of adult kids and their parents. And I think that's a huge difference and a good one.
Of course, there are a lot of twists on this. You've got different traditions and patterns of behavior in different ethnic groups. And, Josh Coleman, you've got the boomers now, who are becoming the grandparents, they didn't have as many children. So they're available more often than if you had five or six kids, who were you going to help?
Well, that's true. And partly because people are having less children, the relationship with those children is much more intense. And so there's the prospect for a much more intimate relationship. Now, that said, there's also the prospect for much more conflict, which is part of what I talk about when parents hurt, that because there's a much more intimate relationship, there's also a greater potential for conflict and disappointment. But, you know, I think that the comics are pointing to something real. The in-law situation often works, but there is the potential for conflict there. There's the potential for resentments to happen, for disappointment, for conflict between the mother-in-law and the son or the daughter. There is still a lot to tease about this situation. It certainly isn't a completely rosy picture.
Hey, family is family. It's never
family's family.
Right.
It's
always complicated, but it can be complicated in a good way. And maybe these days with the economic pinch and parents so often both working, maybe a big help, especially if you're president of the United States with a few things to do.
No question.
Let's go to Teresa, calling from Essex, Massachusetts. Teresa, you're on the air. What do you know?
Well, I congratulate the Obamas for having their mother-in-law coming over and helping them, because my mother did the same for me, and we were most successful in our business from the basement of a $300 apartment to 85,000 square facility in Newburyport, Massachusetts.
Good for you.
Had I not had my mother, I would have never given up being with my daughter. So my mother would be the only person I would trust my kid with. So,
Teresa, did you assume from the beginning that your mother would help when you had kids? Was this part of your culture? You sounds as though you may be Hispanic, Latino. Was this just tradition for you?
Peru, yeah. I'm from Peru. I came to the United States in 1982 and got married. And my husband was a very simple woodworker, and I helped him out in his business. And then, you know, when you're very busy, you don't have time to plan too much. And so then came along our baby, and I was not in a position to not help my husband anymore in his business. So I asked my mother if she would come from Peru to help me, and she said yes. And it has been not only good for me, but good for the 90-plus people that we employ in a very successful manufacturing company, which is unheard of these days.
Teresa, that's a great story, and we're glad it worked out so well for you. It sounds like your mom was the keystone there. Let's get another Beverly in Watertown, Massachusetts. Beverly, you're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to point out, I'm coming from a different perspective and a different era,
mm-hmm.
that, and I'm African-American,
mm-hmm.
that in the black community, this has not been uncommon at all. It goes back generations. However, I will point out that in my own situation, my father was not on the scene. So basically, mm-hmm. I grew up in a family of women. My grandmother was born in 1886. My sister and I were twins, but was born in 1946. So
mm-hmm.
she was 60
mm-hmm.
when she started taking care of us, the two premature infants.
Mm.
My mother, in the meantime, went out to work. We also were surrounded by great aunts, uncles, and aunts. So we had tremendous, you know, inputs into our growing up experience. But our grandmother did the heavy lifting, probably literally
right.
during, you know, the first 9 or 10 years of our
premature
life.
Twins. That's a lot of lifting.
Hello?
Premature twins is a lot of lifting.
Oh, yeah, bottle lifting, yeah. Two little bottles.
Yeah, everything. Beverly, may I ask you, in the African-American community, do you see, I mean, here the Obamas are doing it, but do you see this as becoming more common, less common, steady state to have grandma helping out in the house? Or?
Are you talking about in terms of African-Americans?
Yes, ma'am.
I think so. I mean, in fact, I have seen references to this, read articles about how it may be even more common than it was when I was growing up.
Well, it's clearly a help when there's a living to be made and there are children on the scene. Beverly, thank you so much for your call. Stephanie, what do you know about ethnic patterns here? We've got a sort of Peruvian-American report, an African-American report. How do you hear them?
Well, yes, extended family ties are more common in immigrant groups and also in the African-American tradition, where, of course, from slavery on, you couldn't just depend on a nuclear family. And then even in the 20th century, it was hard sometimes for men to find work in the same town, so they had to leave. Or the mother, even, to work as a live-in maid for a long time. That was one of the main jobs that black women could get. So there's much more of a tradition in the African-American community, not just of grandmothers, but of what's called other mothers, recognizing that even if you're not biologically related, you can be an important part of people's family support networks.
Absolutely.
There was an interesting four-year government-funded Australian study recently that measured children's physical learning and cognitive development, and they found that having other people involved in a child's in rearing children, friends and grandparents, was really crucial in terms of increasing those children's learning scores and their social development. So there seems to be something that's even good for the brain of developing children to have other people around who are involved in taking care of them.
Stephanie, what about that? I grew up with grandparents very much in the scene. Their farmhouse was just down the road from ours, and we were there, and they were at ours all the time. We worked together with my grandfather so much. In my sense of my childhood, that was hugely important and sort of mind-expanding and soul-expanding even for me. What evidence do you see, Stephanie?
Well, I think that's really true. But remember, Josh said that it was also true of friends as well as grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's not the biological state of having a grandparent there. I think it is the social situation of having other input than just your own parents, and especially when you get to the age where you want to question your parents and they're still in their sort of, okay, I know best. To be able to go to someone who's a little more relaxed, you know, like a Michelle Obama's mother who says, okay, you know,
right.
You can have a piece of fried chicken.
Right.
We can talk about things that you might not want to talk about. This is very important to children's development. So actually, I was just seeing sort of danger signals flashing as we were talking a few minutes ago, and I wanted to say, you know, the thing you do have to remember, and I'm a mom mm-hmm. with a grown son who has tremendous grandmother hunger, but I'm not ready to retire, and a lot of women my age are not. So it's important to recognize that not all of us will be able to live in and be full-time, but we still can help out. And the most important thing to remember is that if you have a supportive network, whether they're blood relatives or not, that's better for your kids' development.
You're pointing out there that a lot of Americans are working well into their 60s and 70s. Marian Robinson retired from her job as an executive secretary in a bank in Chicago specifically to help the Obamas, but not everyone's in a situation to do that. Josh Coleman, I mean, that's clearly the case, and maybe that's the flip side of this economic problem. 401k is smaller, pensions may not cover. Grandma and Grandpa may still be working.
That's right. But I think Stephanie raises an important point. One doesn't have to live with a parent in order to get the benefits from them. You can still just visits or spending additional time socially can be really useful for children.
Let's get a call from Cottageville, South Carolina, and Jackie. Hi, Jackie. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Tom. I just wanted to share that in my growing up, my grandmother, my mother's mother, lived with us, my sister, our entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
We got married, moved out, and she continued to live with my mom and dad until she passed away. And, you know, one of the things that I felt like was and now that I'm an adult and I have my own grandchildren, are the memories that I still think of when I set the table for Thanksgiving, or when I cook something from scratch and I don't use a box, you know, ready item. And
because these are things you learned from the grandmother in the house.
Grandmother. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, my grandmother taught us all those things. And now my mother-in-law from my first marriage now lives with me and my husband. And when my grandchildren come over, you know, she shares things with them. And so it's like, you know, the great-grandmother's there, I'm there, and my daughter's there. And, you know, we all are able to contribute. And my granddaughter, who's 9, looked at me at Thanksgiving and said, "Grammy, we're making memories, aren't we?" And it meant so much to me, because growing up with my grandmother, that's what we did. And it's just continuing on now.
Jackie, it's a beautiful story, and I'm struck by the flexibility of American families. You said your mother-in-law from your first marriage is living with you. So you're not just generations mingling there, but different sort of tiers of marriage living together there, Jackie.
Exactly. And she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And my daughter, you know, she's very close to her grandmother. But now my grandchildren, who is my mother-in-law's great-grandchildren, are very close to her. And, you know, they're going to carry on in their memories the time that they've been able to spend with her.
Jackie, that's a great report, and we're very, very glad to have it. Thank you so much for calling with that. And let me get one more here from Bomasine, Vermont, and Bob. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My mother-in-law, she lived with us for 18 years and helped raise our 3 boys. And it was, you know, a win-win situation for us. She taught them, you know, the value of a dollar. She would always be having them do little jobs for spending money. One of the biggest things was she taught them a respect for the elderly, so that my boys now have, I think, more of a intimate respect for the elderly
mm-hmm.
that they run into the community.
Yep.
But my question for the panel is that we experienced my mother-in-law during her later years, she came down with dementia.
It happens.
Yeah, and, you know, the 3 boys, they were older, of course, but my youngest was in his early teens. And it was difficult for the 3 of them to, you know, see this happen after, you know, 17, 18 years of living with us. And, you know, it still affects them today when we talk about my mother-in-law living with us. And I just wanted to ask the panel, you know, how would they address, you know, something like this, where it's great to have your mother-in-law living with you, but the grandchildren could experience death at an early age, and, you know, how do parents deal with that if something like that occurs?
Bob, that is it's both a wonderful story and a kind of get real story. This isn't a Disney movie we're talking about. It's real life, and thank you for your call. Stephanie, we've just got half a minute before the break, but begin to take this one on, because the full span of life comes much more on the horizon when grandparents are in the house.
I can take this on personally. My mother, although she didn't live with us, lived very close to us and had Alzheimer's the last 12 years of her life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best experiences for my son was having the hardship, even though it was very hard at the time, of recognizing that you have to let go and that you have to care for other people. I think the reason that he is now going to med school and public health is because of that experience, having to help care for his grandmother.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about grandparents helping parents raise kids. Barack Obama's mother-in-law is in the house, or soon to be, and a lot of other in-laws, grandparents, increasingly are too. We're asking, how does that work out? Stephanie Koons is with us from Evergreen State College. She joins us from Olympia, Washington, author of Marriage, A History. And Joshua Coleman is here, clinical psychologist in California, joins us from Berkeley, California, author of When Parents hurt. Of course, Barack Obama himself spent a lot of time with grandparents. His grandmother, Madeleine Dunham, died in November. You may recall that from the campaign season. In a speech in early November, a day after her death, she helped raise him. A teary-eyed Barack Obama told the crowd what she had meant to him.
She's one of those quiet heroes that we have all across America who, they're not famous, their names aren't in the newspapers, but each and every day they work hard. They look after their families. They sacrifice for their children and their grandchildren. They aren't seeking the limelight. All they try to do is just do the right thing.
Barack Obama speaking of his grandmother, Madeleine Dunham, just a day or two after her death in November. Joshua Coleman, our caller in Vermont, Bob asks about the effect. I mean, the care isn't all a one-way thing here when you get into having grandparents necessarily. He says, what about the effect of dementia or death? These may come along with the reality of grandparents. Certainly death does at some point. What about the effect on a family when the grandparents are in the house and this part of life and death begins to reveal?
I think parents should see it as an opportunity to teach their children some profound lessons about life and life ending. Dementia is, in many ways, if you live long enough, an expected part of living and dying. And the more that parents can show their children their own resilience in the face of it, they can teach their children about how to handle it, because at some point in time, we as their parents are going to be that demented person or that person in need of some kind of care and sensitivity. So we're providing role modeling. The most important thing is to be able to talk with your children about it, to answer questions, to allay their fears if they have them. But I think in general, people exaggerate the damage or the harm that children experience when they're exposed to this kind of thing. I think in general, children are more curious, they're interested, and they're accepting of their parents' explanations and also their parents' demonstrations of how they're going to handle it. They'll take their cues from us.
Though, of course, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Stephanie Kuntz, what do you find? I mean, I can see people reaching out here to grandparents when they're still in the bloom of health, and wow, what a great help it could be, but this is a complicated picture, and things don't stay the same forever.
No, they don't. And, of course, most families are very loving and understand that there's an ebb and flow of dependence, that you may get things in some periods and need to give things in others. But I hope I didn't answer the question too blithely about the Alzheimer's, because dealing with my own mother and dementia, it wasn't particularly hard for my son in dealing with her, but he found it difficult that I was so distracted. I was not able to quit my job and work. I had to load this on top of parenting a teenager who occasionally had some of the same demented symptoms, and I was in tremendous, tremendous stress. So I think there's a point at which family can't do everything. We were able to hire some help as well to come in. I think government has really got to think about these support systems for the elderly as they grow, so that families can do more with their kids, with their adult parents or their dependents. They don't have to farm them out, but we have to have respite care. We have to have the support systems that unfortunately have been being cut back on and that families really need, because you can't do all of this yourself all the time.
Josh, what about in the days, years before these are issues, when it's just, let's say, healthy in-laws or grandparents in the house helping with the kids and perhaps other things? You talk to families. What are the most important issues or tips you can share on how to make this work effectively, rather than to get into those old binds that were the subject of so many jokes in mid-20th century?
Well, I think in many ways the law should be sort of similar to a good marriage, and that is to try to keep the lines of communication open, try to not let resentment build, to try to talk through things that come up. I think in general, one of the most common conflicts that I see working with families is where the mother-in-law or father-in-law gives unasked for advice about parenting, and to be sensitive that if you're living in your adult child's home, that it has to be considered their home, and that in general they set the rules, that it can't be rigid, that the most healthy homes are those where there's a certain amount of flexibility and discussion and compromise. But bottom line, the parents have to be the ones who are who are going to set the rules about child rearing. So in general, though, I think the most important thing is to try to keep the lines of communication open and to not let resentments build.
Stephanie, what's your best guidance?
John?
Yeah, please.
Don't you think, too, though, that it's a two-way street? Because parents can't be too rigid. I mean, if you've got a mom or a dad who thinks that it's okay to take the kids out for an ice cream cone when you don't, I think you need to bite your tongue on the other side, too.
Roll with it a little bit.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I see that just as much. We're particularly today's parents who are, to my way of thinking, overly conscientious about their parenting and very worried about the effects of television or sugar or that kind of thing. I think it is useful for parents to learn how to also bite their tongue and be much more relaxed about that. So I think, Stephanie, you raise a good point.
Everybody gets to learn a little flexibility. Let's hear from B in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. B, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're having this program and giving us some attention. I'm a grandmother, and I have Lucy and Jane in Portland, Oregon. They're 3 and 1. And I'm here in Massachusetts, and unfortunately, we don't get together much.
It's not exactly right around the corner, Oregon to Massachusetts.
No, it's not. I'm trying to move out there to be closer. But I guess the caller who said at Thanksgiving, we're building memories, aren't we, Mom? And I love that part because I think, you know, that is something that I can offer the children, is memories.
Yes.
So I thank you for having the program and giving us support and recognition. And, I'm feeling a little sad missing my own. But
I can understand that, and I hope you get to see a lot of Lucy and Jane B. Good luck getting out there. My own in-laws are in Oregon. We're just here for 3 weeks over the holidays, and it was wonderful. My parents were here at Thanksgiving, and certainly the deeper life of the family comes much more to the fore when they're all around. Bea, hope you're in close touch with them. Richard in Groton, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
I love your program, Tom.
Thank you.
I have a mother-in-law who had six daughters and whose six son-in-laws have competed for her presence.
Wow.
Yeah, and when she was in failing health, after 100 years of age, she was getting a little tired. We had the privilege of sharing in her care by having her come to each of our homes. And we're now grandparents ourselves and have replicated those patterns of parenting with our children.
What was it about her, Richard, that made six son-in-laws or sons-in-law compete for grandma's attention to their house?
Well, it's hard to put a finger on it. She was Greek. This was during the Depression days when her own husband died at a young age, and she brought up these six girls in a cold water flat, all of whom pulled themselves up by their bootstraps using her example of trudging through the snow to the bus and working in a textile mill. We're all professionals now, and our children and her grandchildren are professionals.
Yeah.
She did something right. We fondly remember her homilies and aphorisms and just enjoy her memory as we did her presence.
That's a great thing. And into her hundreds, no less.
She passed away at about 104, right?
Richard, it's a beautiful story, and lucky six families, it sounds like, that got to share in her presence. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jason in Torrington, Connecticut. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I truly do believe in it takes a village to raise a child, but I am also a teacher, and we need to look at the reality of the fact that there is not a traditional family in all aspects, no matter what economic status or what nationality. people come from. And one of the things that I see as a teacher is when grandparents are doing the raising, they're not necessarily able to help the children, say, in their schoolwork or in their social problems that they're having. And you know, the reality of it is that there are children these days who don't necessarily respect authority, and therefore grandparents get walked all over. So there is the good. I truly do believe in that, but there's also the negative side as well.
Jason, I hear you. I think you're describing a situation. This isn't the Waltons. This isn't many generations necessarily under one roof. This may be the grandparents with primary responsibility and some challenges in delivering on that.
Correct. And it's not just the primary responsibility, but it's also when they're in the household helping out. There's that problem.
Yeah, thank you very much. Joshua Coleman, have you seen that?
Well, I'm not sure what specifically.
Well, helping with homework, will the grandparents be quite as on top of that? Discipline, establishing respect for authority, you know, our teacher caller Jason says he's not sure it always works so well.
Well, I guess I've seen both. I've seen cases where the grandparents weren't, either because they weren't educated as well, and they weren't hadn't really developed the kind of habits of doing homework themselves in order to really pass it on and structure it, and others who were masterful at it and were really kind of the rock of the family. So I guess I've seen both.
Stephanie, how about you? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, families are under a lot of stress today, and they have been for 20 or 30 years. Even during the boom period, people who only had a high school education or less were really falling behind and making it harder and harder to raise families and to keep their kids in school. So this is a good example of why, whether it's helping out with an Alzheimer's mother who just you can't keep entirely at home by yourself, or with kids in a family that's under stress, we need other sorts of social programs that don't substitute for family care, but make it more effective. And in the case of your last caller, this is why we need better after-school programs.
Yeah, no kidding, to have the full gamut there, if we can, for grandmothers or, for that matter, grandfathers. It's hard to step in to the whole vacuum of needs. Let's get a call from Laramie, Wyoming, and Jillian. Jillian, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I just wanted to tell a little story about my mother-in-law and how she has just been a lifesaver to us. My husband and I, we had a baby unexpectedly, and we had no money, and I was working as a teacher, and she was, my mother-in-law was in the Peace Corps in Morocco. And as soon as she heard, she just, like, said, you know what, I love what I'm doing here, but my family needs me. And she came back to Wyoming, and she bought a house that she rented out to us that has a mother-in-law house in the back.
Yeah.
And she has just been awesome. I mean, we wouldn't have been able, I don't know what we'd have done without her. And
how old's your child now, Jillian? How old's the baby?
15 months. She's almost a year and a half.
And grandma home from Morocco, and it sounds like really helping make it all work out.
Well, she really is, yeah. I mean, she has a job. She works full-time, but, you know, at 4 o'clock she comes home, and I have a few hours to. I'm an artist. I can work in my studio, and I can stay home with my baby, which is, like, really all I wanted to do. And, you know, I'll be honest, though, the first year it was kind of tough because I was really holding on to those, you know, like, rugged individualist sort of ideals where I wanted to have my own home and my husband and do it all myself. But it was just such a great realization that it's okay to be helped. And, I spent some time in Spain after my university education, and I lived with a family there, and they all lived together, the grandmother, the 30-year-old son, the, you know, and all their kids, and I just marveled at how well that worked out. But when I came back to America, it wouldn't translate.
And now suddenly it's your life as well, and it sounds like it's working pretty well. Jillian, thank you so much for that. Stephanie, we've got a caller I'm not going to get to here. Bonnie saying, hey, what about grandfathers? I mean, obviously it's not just grandmothers who fill this role, but what about it? Do you see grandparents moving in as couples more? Is it mainly grandmothers?
It's still mainly grandmothers. But we know that men have been, in general, men are taking more on, when they're young fathers, taking more responsibility for childcare, getting more involved in family life than fathers of the past used to be. So I expect that we're also going to see this with grandfathers.
If mother-in-law jokes were kind of a 20th century thing, what do you expect in this century, Stephanie? Are we headed deeper into extended families under one roof?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're still talking about a small percentage of American families. Mm-hmm. But I do think, or at least hope, that we are beginning to develop an understanding of the need for more extended family ties, that the nuclear family, just putting all of your eggs in the basket of that husband, wife, two kids situation, is really not helpful in the modern world to either parents or to the elder parents of those parents or to the kids themselves. And somehow we need to be able to reach out and build better support networks.
Joshua Coleman, what do you think? We've just got half a minute here, but the Obamas maybe as something emerging as more common in American society, their situation, that, which we'll all be watching in the White House?
Well, I think Stephanie's right. We don't exactly know how many more people will be doing it, but I suspect that the trend will continue both for economic reasons and because we're seeing closer relationships between parents and their adult children. And I think it is something that is good for us as a society to move away from this very individualistic, atomistic culture that we've been in to something that's much more integrated.
Well, here we go. Back to 1961, Mother-in-Law from Ernie Dowe, Joshua Coleman, Stephanie Kuntz. Thanks so much to you both, and thanks to our callers today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Try to put me out.